It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and I are back. Mary Jo Foley is here. There's lots to talk about, including, yes, Microsoft's quarterly earnings. Why won't they tell us how many people use Teams? Is Windows 11 for enthusiasts? Paul says no way. The details behind Pluton and why it might be the explanation for why Windows 11 is so limited. And finally, the Xbox boot time cut by 5 whole seconds. So coming up next, Windows Weekly. Stay here.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 787. Recorded Wednesday, July 27th, 2022. No code, faux code. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Tanium. Tanium unites operations and security teams with a single platform that identifies where all your IT data is, patches every device you own in seconds, and implements critical security controls, all from a single pane of glass. Are you ready to protect your organization from cyber threats? Learn more at tanium.com/twit. And by New Relic, use the data platform made for the curious. Right now, you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data per month free forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/windows. And by IT Pro TV. Give your team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/windows and make sure to mention WW30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. It's time for Windows Weekly. Hello, dozers! The show where we come... Sorry, didn't mean to wake you up. Show that covers the latest news from Windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo, thank you for... Well, I guess I should thank you for doing such a good job last week. Maybe I shouldn't. You did a wonderful
like
job.
Like when Steve Jobs was out sick and Tim Cook did a great job.
Yeah,
exactly.
You Wally pipped us.
I had some good guests. Zach Bowden and Rich Woods were fantastic.
Thank them. And we heard, we're on the boat, right, on this cruise, and we heard from fans who were downloading the podcast as we were sailing. Windows Weekly was great yesterday. So.
Nice.
I couldn't watch it. I tried to stream it, and I couldn't get it to work.
Though the internet on a boat is the worst. I thought I warned everybody.
Part of the plan. The evil plan.
Apparently, Twig was a laugh riot. Micah Sargent was brilliant on the Tech Guy. I don't want to come home.
Off with their heads.
Yeah. They're all history. Anyway, I'm glad. I'm very glad that Zach and Rich could help you, Mary Jo.
Agree.
That's nice. You mice did play while the cats were away.
We did.
But now we're back, and it was not a great quarter for Microsoft. Time for earnings learnings.
What I like about this, if you don't mind just me jumping in real quick, is Mary Jo's story literally focuses on Teams and how they gave us 17 different numbers, none of which were users.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's telling, isn't it, when they don't give
that
you...
That sums up earnings in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the encapsulation of everything you need to know about how Microsoft reports earnings.
Yeah.
Cherry picking.
It's getting
the
worse.
Best data.
It's getting worse.
It is absolutely getting worse. Yep.
It is.
Yep.
We're getting fewer and fewer hard numbers. We're getting more and more percentages. But what good is a percentage when you don't know the base that it's based on? Right?
Yep. That's crazy.
Like Azure Group, 40%.
I don't understand why nobody calls them on this. You get all this Q&A at the end. Nobody says, guys, what's going on? We have no idea how you're doing.
No, you know what? The analysts like it.
You have tens of billions of dollars. They like it.
The analysts actually like it. They think they're giving the correct metrics from people I've talked to, and that they think, I don't really care if I don't know the exact number. I like that they give us the cloud number, the cloud margin number, their bookings numbers. I'm like, but they're not really giving me the numbers.
What is that? Would it hurt them if they did give the numbers?
Yes.
Would that be
hurt them? Yes. Because if Microsoft gives you the Azure number, the first thing every reporter will do is compare it to the AWS number, Right.
Oh, well, let's compare something to the AWS number because they give us a Microsoft Cloud number, which is nonsense.
Yeah.
And by the way, the thing that I took away from that, this is the former commercial cloud, is that's only 50% of Microsoft's revenues. In fact, it's not even 50%.
Right.
So where's all the
right
other money under. Coming from, guys? Where's the other money coming from? This is all you want to talk about, but more than this is coming from elsewhere at the company. I mean, you don't have to. I'm not that smart. I figured that out.
Like, well, do you, think they're fooling investors? I mean, the market responded with a 5% gain in stock price. Their report card was A+.
Well, they gave a very rosy outlook for next year, right? Which
but are they? So the whole point of quarterly results and 10-Ks and all of that is 10-Qs is to tell investors. Right. Whether this is a worthwhile stock, how the company's doing. Yep. That's why we pay attention because that's a it's supposed to tell us how the company's doing. But if you're if you're fudging those numbers, what?
Well, here's a metric you might want to pay attention to if you want to know how well the company's doing. They issue financial guidance every quarter for the current quarter. They did that you know yesterday for this quarter. Last quarter, they said it's going to come in at some number, and then halfway through the quarter, they said, "Just kidding, it's going to be worse." They revised their guidance, and then they still missed that target. That's how this company's doing.
Well, but everybody gets 5%, to do that. This is Apple did the same thing.
Yeah,
everybody gets to do that now because of recession, supply chain,
Leo,
COVID.
You got to understand when companies report their expectations for the current quarter, it's conservative, right?
You're right.
They're not blowing the roof out. They want to beat that number. So the fact that they came in low twice, so to speak. I actually, you know, I mean, it's an indication that our economy is in a free fall, that there's a almost a recession sort of type situation happening. Obviously, inflation's really high.
Yeah.
The high value of the dollar. One of the interesting things.
But next quarter's going to be great.
Yeah. Right. Because this can't last forever, right?
Kind of.
I did a, I often translate euros into dollars when I report companies from Europe, like the finances, like Spotify. When you convert their net income, their revenue, et cetera, there's nothing to convert. It's the same number. Like, that's how bad the euro is doing. That hasn't been true for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. This is it's the holy grail of financial problems. You know, it's all the stuff we had before, inflation, and then the high value of the dollar, you know. And then, you know, the first item is COVID, pandemic, work from home, war with Russia, you know, China supply
it's
shortage.
It's the thing that the markets normally hate, which is uncertainty.
Yeah, there you go.
And yet they reward Microsoft with a
5%. Well, look, they're going to survive the quarter, right? This is a big company.
Yes,
that makes
they're
going to
survive. Ooh, that's right.
I think they're going to be okay.
Wow.
Yeah. You can take that one off the table. No, look, this is a huge company. They're doing great. And, you know, they're a diversified company, too. In my own way, I kind of pointed that out. You know, Microsoft only wants to talk about cloud, but more than 50% of Microsoft's revenues don't come from the cloud.
So do you want to break it down by division? Like, you know, gaming was bad, right?
Gaming was bad.
Yeah.
Well, let's by division, there are three primary business units at Microsoft, right? Intelligent cloud, productivity and business services, I think, and then more personal computing. So let me find my...
Surface did well, right?
Yeah.
Surface was up 10% for the quarter because of commercial, so business.
We sold a lot of sporks this quarter. They're the smallest part of the empire. Like, what? Yeah, I guess...
Okay, but like for the purposes of our audience, assuming they're not investors.
Windows and PCs were down. Xbox was down.
Yep.
Surface, curiously, was up. They never mentioned it. Nobody asked. And so all I can venture is that you talk about things like year-over-year comparables. Right? They had a strong product lineup last fall. It's kind of weird because we're kind of at the tail end of that. But they must have, a year ago, not have had as, I don't remember, as strong of a lineup. So... I think they never said it that way, but nothing happened to make Surface revenues be higher. You know, there was
nothing
special.
The Duo 2 was killing it, Paul.
It was it.
Duo 2 flying out the door.
Flying out the door.
Maybe.
No.
So, but okay. So, I guess Microsoft's business is cloud. Yes. I mean, all of everything else is sporks.
No, not everything else.
No, okay. I'll tell you what surprised me in these earnings.
It's sporks all the way down, Paul. What are you talking about?
It is.
Cloud and sporks. No,
gaming being down surprised me, actually, because I feel like it's been pretty up all the most recent quarters. And yeah. I had a chance to ask the head of investor relations. I'm like, so why is gaming down? And he's like, well, you know, the pandemic, it's kind of like not over, but like people are going back to work. So they're playing less games. I'm like, okay. Are they though?
What?
Right? Like what?
They said lower engagement hours and monetization.
Yeah, which
in
is
third
that,
party and first
right?
party content.
Lower engagement hours. Yeah.
Fewer. So they actually do. They have numbers on how many hours people are playing.
Of course, and they will not show that.
Paul Thurrott went on a cruise and it just killed the Call of Duty numbers.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
it's true
the market
that I
fell
did
apart.
Not play a single game for 10 days. That's
wow. How did you live?
You know, I don't. That doesn't bother me for some reason. When I go on a home swap or a trip, I
you
never
were busy.
Play games tonight. Yeah, I do other things. You know, I
right.
Yeah. The right. thing that did bother me is I didn't watch a single video while I was gone. That was weird.
You didn't? Wow.
You couldn't.
No, not a single one. Couldn't.
Oh, no right. TikTok.
Right.
Instagram was back to still photos. It was a very
which is what we want anyway.
I know. Oh Lord.
Yeah. What is this? The 1980s? Come on.
Oh my God.
No, the other number that I was surprised at was advertising was down, right? And so you could say, okay, companies are advertising less because the market's uncertain. We've got like, you know, recession, inflation, blah, blah, blah. But I said to the investor relations guy, I'm like, wait, Microsoft is putting ads in like every single product and service you own. How could advertising be down? And he's like,
right.
Mary Jo, that's not really the same thing. I'm like, I know, I'm just making a point.
You know, when advertising was up for Microsoft was what they call news advertising.
Right.
And I think this is that stuff. This is why they put
it
stuff
is.
In Windows to force you to go to their
that's right.
properties, yep. right? I think that's what that
right.
is.
MSN. Yeah, MSN, the thing called Start mm-hmm. Now, Start Experience. Yep. That's all advertising driven, right?
Yep.
They want to sell ads. So yeah, those two numbers surprised me. I thought they were going to give us a new Teams number, like number of users mm-hmm. of Teams, but they didn't, which
you
to me
pointed
says...
This up, but how long has it been since we got a new Teams number?
January.
Oh, January.
No, so yeah, but they gave us like I wrote in my story, they gave us all these numbers around the number of users, like, you know, percentage of engagement around Teams rooms and, you know, how many people are doing chat. And then they're like, we're taking share with Teams. I'm like, who are you taking share from? Say it. Are you taking share from Zoom? Are you taking share from Salesforce? Like, say it.
I need you to be like Sam Kinison on the call. And
Yeah, it's not really germane, but Google's ad revenues were up.
Great.
a jump in advertising related to its search business. Cloud business was up 36%.
But we know their number.
Their cloud
their
business
number is
very small.
$6.3 billion.
$6 billion for the quarter compared to $25 billion for Microsoft. Okay.
So they got still a long way to go.
They got a ways to go.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've always had a ways to go.
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Snap tanked the market last week when the when they said, "Oh, our ad sales are really, really off."
Yep.
Right.
You know, and I don't really know what's going on. Chaos.
Did no one write the headline? Oh snap! Google's ad sales were fine. Nobody wrote that.
No. Maybe they did.
You
I should
could.
Find it.
Someone should have.
I should find it. Yeah.
Okay. The best number in all of earnings. The most important number. That many people missed. I think I'm the only one who even cares about this number, maybe. Microsoft did say what percentage of the Microsoft 365 base is now on E5. E5 is the highest end SKU, the most expensive, the most fully featured, the one with all the security features. So in 2021, that number was only 8%. So that means everybody else was on E1 and E3, right? Yesterday, they said 12%.
Right.
So their pitch of getting people to move up the stack and spend more and get the higher price SKUs is working, right? 8%
so
in 2021, now 12%.
I'm curious what you think about this, Mary Jo. I think every
Paul's
quarter.
Like, why do you even care about this number?
I noticed this. I think you'll be interested in this. I think every quarter they look at their earnings. They think, all right, look, we're gonna pull stuff here. We have to have a narrative. Every quarter there's going to be a narrative, right? So like this quarter, Azure growth was only, you know, which is crazy, 40%, which is amazing actually. But only
40%. And every analyst was mad about that number.
And everyone's freaking out about that. And it's like, guys, mature business, it's been around. Okay. But my theory is they of all the things they saw, someone said, this quarter is going to be the E5 quarter. This is what we're going to highlight.
Yeah.
No, I really feel like they were like, every quarter has to have a like a hero of the quarter, and we're going to make it E5 this quarter. Because they talked about E5 a lot.
They did. I feel like people, I wanted to yell, like, guys, that number's important. Look at that number right there. It means they're selling more expensive SKUs to more people. That's because people always say, what's Microsoft's secret weapon after Microsoft 365 and Teams, right? Like, are they going to have some new suite, some new thing? And I'm like, no, they're going to get more people to spend more on what they have, right? So the, over like time, they want to grow E5, right?
Yeah. The potential market for Microsoft 365 is almost infinite. I mean,
it is kind of.
There's still a huge base of people out there who are not on it. I mean,
exactly.
Or are on lower end SKUs or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Teams, though, I wanted a number. I kept waiting and like, they're going to drop a Teams number, right? They're going to drop one. They're giving us so many Teams numbers.
I also, I called, I did something similar to you where I listed every single number they said. It's like, that's great. But how many users was that again? You know, like, I mean, like, that's all, no, it's all good. Everything you said was fantastic.
Well, what numbers did they give you? Like what?
They give you things like Teams Phone now has more than 12 million PSTN users. Okay.
That's worthless. Who cares?
They've added 450 new features in the past year alone.
Oh, yep. God. I get what you're saying.
60% of the Fortune 500 have chosen Teams Rooms to connect hybrid workplaces. I'm like,
and 25%
great.
Of them use Viva.
Yeah.
100,000 like, companies have deployed custom line of business apps and Teams.
Users are there?
Yeah. Lots of numbers. Yep.
That they're really, I mean, that's like a red flag, the way they talk around that.
It kind of is. Yeah.
I think that's exactly what I think as well. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Me too.
You make it too obvious that you're avoiding, when you talk around the truth, people, I mean, don't they, don't you just, I mean, how do you not react to that the way we both reacted? Like you're hiding something.
Right.
Why bother?
Yep. Another weird thing, or interesting thing anyway, for me, I always do this on earnings calls. I look for words that they repeat and words that come up a lot. So one of the words that came up a lot during this earnings call was consumption. I don't know if you heard them talking about this, right? Consumption kept coming up. Like Amy Hood starts out by saying, you know, Azure consumption was a little soft in Q4. And I'm like, immediately my ears perk up. I'm like, what does that mean? Right? Like you sold people stuff and they didn't deploy it? Is that what that means? Right? Mm. And then later in the call, two different analysts asked them about the consumption thing. They're like, so what are you saying about the consumption thing? And basically what they're saying is, you know, we're talking about all these giant Azure contracts we sell. They said they have a record number of over $1 billion Azure contracts that they have sold in this past year. A record number of over $100 million Azure contracts they've sold. But when you sell contracts that big, people can't just like turn it on and just be like, okay, now we're deploying Azure everywhere. It's like on. It was off, now it's on. It doesn't really work like that. It takes time, right? It takes time to roll out these things, migrate things, set up your whole new way of working to accommodate the different Azure services you bought. So it's almost like when the channel has too many PCs and they need to sell through. This is like Azure. They sold a lot of Azure, and now they need to get people to actually use all the licenses that they sold, right?
Right.
So that was a kind of an interesting little... I've never heard them actually talk about that on a call. It was cool.
from my perspective, the two things I'm always, you know, I care about the most, the PC stuff, I keep looking for evidence that this kind of post or... COVID era boom is kind of ending, right? I think we're seeing a little bit of that, you know, and I think we've seen that from PC makers, et cetera. But there's also, you know, why would anyone react negatively to these numbers? You know, if you look at the year ago quarter, same, you know, when we're after 1 year of the pandemic, Microsoft grew revenue by 40%. That's insane, right?
It is.
But the problem is people expect that to continue, even though that's illogical. It could never happen, right? So I think their growth this quarter was probably 20 or 18%, something like that. Mm. 18% overall. So and that's for the quarter. That's for the year. I'm sorry. What was the quarter? The quarter was actually it was 12%. So, you know, these are normal. Well, those are still blockbuster numbers, honestly, for a company the size of Microsoft. But because it soared so high during the pandemic, I think... You know, you look at it a little more negatively, just like you look at Azure, like 40%. Come on, you guys used to grow at 70%. Yeah, this business has been around for a long time.
You know, and it's much bigger.
Right?
That's the problem with these percentages. Like people are like, well, you know, two quarters ago, they were growing over 50%. Yeah, it was a smaller base, right? I'm that's like, yeah, it was a smaller base.
Yep. Yeah, right. Which is,
I know. People never seem to note that, the whole law of large numbers thing. I'm like, yeah, they are growing. It's going to go down over time because the number that they're growing, the base number they're growing is going to be bigger and bigger and bigger, right?
This is like a glass half full versus glass half empty kind of conversation, right? So Windows revenues from PC makers declined 2% year over year. Like, and they describe the PC market as deteriorating. That sounds terrible, right? But then Satya Nadella came out and said, yeah, but it, you know, the volume, the unit sales, I think is what he meant, is still better than it was before the pandemic.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Though that's what the other side of the curve could look like right after the peak. The question is, where does it land? You know, does it keep going down or is this like the new, you know, baseline? Mm-hmm. And I hope this is the new baseline. That's great.
Yeah. Right.
We'll see.
Okay. I guess that's the story of the learnings earnings.
Have that's all my learnings.
We haven't
learned a lot,
I have to say.
Well, if you were looking for hard numbers, you didn't learn anything.
Yeah.
Right.
But if you were looking for, like, platitudes, my God, it was full of that. Satya Nadella's opening quote in the press release was so devoid of content, I forgot stuff.
Like,
he didn't say
funny.
Anything. He is now. Granted, this was supplied to him by some PR person, but
exactly.
But it reads like something he would say. It's nothing. It's just nothing.
Lots Microsoft of buzzwords strung together.
Yeah, we're positioned. We're delivering on digital. You know, it's like okay, and you can do more with less. Just like our
more with less. More with less is going to be the phrase of the year, I think, because it came up at Inspire at the partner show. It came up several times yesterday. I'm like, so this is their new catchphrase. Like, we're helping customers do more with less, right? It's going to.
Here's an idea. Microsoft could have an incredible bit of growth just by helping customers use the stuff they're already paying for. Like you said, I think one of the more interesting things about Office back in the day, and I would say this probably applies to Microsoft 365 today, is you as a customer of Microsoft have this incredible well of capabilities, and you're probably only using a tiny percentage of it.
Right.
Right?
All right. I'm going to call it.
We learned. We had earnings and
11:37. We've learned and we've earned.
One last stat.
I'm not dead yet.
One last stat. This was very interesting. This was Microsoft's first time missing on earnings since 2016.
Yeah.
That's pretty astounding, right?
Well, that's only 6 years ago. Come on. I mean,
but come on. They haven't missed a single time.
Yeah.
They haven't missed a single time.
Well, this is the company's only, how old are they? 35 years old?
Yeah.
45.
Yeah. So a miss means missing their predictions or the analysts' predictions?
Analyst predictions. Yeah. Analyst predictions.
So isn't that kind of up to the analysts? I mean, isn't that
Microsoft? Well, but they base it on what Microsoft says. You know, Microsoft missed their own numbers as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Twice.
How close are the analysts to to Microsoft?
What do you mean?
Like, well, I guess they must. So this came up yesterday after the Apple earnings on MacBreak Weekly.
Yeah.
Apple used to sandbag the analysts in order to get a nice stock bump. Lowball the analysts.
Right. They would be a conservative. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And the analysts would come in low.
I think every company does that. Right?
Well,
don't they?
Apple used to do it. The consensus among the panel was, I think Jason said this, it seems that in the last few quarters, somebody in the federal government might have said something like, you know, you guys need
it
to give
to
us
be in the same
accurate predictions.
Yeah.
So in the last few quarters, Apple's numbers have been pretty right on compared to what, you know, the past. The analysts haven't missed by much.
Apple used to report hard numbers for all of their product lines,
but
right?
They don't
so
do
that's
that
something
either.
They stopped doing. Yeah. Right. So I wonder if those two things aren't related in some way.
Yeah.
It's a little easier to hide things.
The thing is supposed to be informative for investors, and it's supposed to be accurate.
Exactly. That's always been my argument, right?
Yeah.
You're not giving me the information I need to know,
and it's
to
up
make
to the
me want to be a
it's
shareholder.
Up to the SEC to enforce that, to say, you know, you guys aren't doing it right, you know. But non-GAAP accounting and all this stuff has kind of crept into the forecast now, and nobody seems to care, so. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. But at least
I don't think reporting rules have changed. I think
no.
companies have just push the boundaries, push the boundaries, push the boundaries.
Enforcement is lacking, perhaps.
And there's been nothing. Yeah, 10 years later, perhaps. It's like, look, we don't have to report anything.
Perhaps that's the...
I'm surprised shareholders don't revolt a little bit about this. You know, I don't understand why this isn't concerning to people.
Yeah, I don't either.
It would be to me if I wanted to invest in these companies.
Maybe shareholders ultimately realize it has nothing to do with the stock price. It's just, you know, the stock price
kind of doesn't, right?
No. I mean, well, look, it went up 5%.
Yeah, right. You know, paint a happy picture. We don't care about the numbers.
Look
just
at GameStop.
Make it look good.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a little tiny weeny break because there's lots more to talk about. Paul Theroux, Theroux.com. Did you work at the on the book at all on the trip?
I did. Yep.
Wow, I'm impressed. So the leanpub.com will soon have a field guide for Windows 11.
I wanted to get it done while we were there, but the connectivity was so terrible.
Yeah.
I really wanted to get that thing up.
I tried to tell everybody, you know, unless you're in a port, you might as well enjoy yourself.
When I was in my room, I couldn't get connected, but if I opened the door to my room into the hall, I could get connectivity. Oh. So I actually spent one afternoon laying on the floor with my laptop up against the door, and right there I could get
Oh, that's hysterical. Yeah. See the lengths he goes to, ladies and gentlemen, to get those books into your hot little hands.
It was like a caveman trying to get on the internet, you know.
My advice always is when you're going on a cruise, that's an excuse to get off the internet and enjoy.
Yes. Yeah. Take a vacation.
Yes.
He doesn't know how.
Lisa was the same way.
Writing makes me feel good about myself, that I can enjoy myself.
Okay. All right.
That's sad.
That's nice.
Mary Jo Foley, she doesn't have that problem.
You saw my pictures. I didn't do nothing.
I do not have that problem.
She is at allaboutmicrosoft.com, where she does file at least several times a day her ZDNet blog. Yes. Our show today brought to you by Tanium. Breaking down those silos between operations and security, the industry's approach to cybersecurity, I think if you listen to Security Now, you know this is, I guess, fundamentally flawed. Wouldn't be saying it too strongly. It's broke. IT management and security point tools are really just a small piece of the solution that you need to protect your environment. A lot of them overpromise and underdeliver, talking about overpromising. They say, we can stop all breaches. They just can't. They simply can't. And some of the problem is that you're getting stale data. You cannot make decisions on stale data. You cannot defend your critical assets from cyber attacks with tools that don't communicate with one another. That's just no way for IT teams to navigate today's attack surface. You have a better way. You have a choice, a different approach, Tanium, T-A-N-I-U-M. They say it's time for a convergence of tools, endpoints, and IT operations and security. They put it all together in one package, solutions for government entities, yes, education, yes, financial services, retail, healthcare. That gives you some idea of the breadth. You can trust their solutions for every workflow that relies on endpoint data, whether it be asset discovery and inventory. Wouldn't it be nice to know, you know, track down every IT asset in seconds? Just know everything you've got right there. Risk and compliance management, very important. You got to be able to find and fix vulnerabilities. Again, do it in seconds. Know that you're up to date. If you're doing threat hunting, you'll love the ability to hunt for sophisticated adversaries in real time. You can manage clients remotely, automate operations from discovery to management. You can monitor that data that's so critical, make sure that it's safe and not being exfiltrated, for instance. Index and monitor sensitive data globally. Again, in seconds. That's the key. Fresh data, instant data, a picture right now of what's going on. Tanium protects organizations where other endpoint management and security providers have failed. One platform, Tanium, identifies where all your data is across your entire IT estate, patches every device you own like that, implements critical security controls, and it does it all from a single pane of glass. Just ask Kevin Bush. He's the vice president of IT at Ring Power Corp. Quote, Tanium brings visibility to one screen for our whole team. If you don't have that kind of visibility, you're not going to be able to sleep at night. Sounds like he speaks from experience. With real-time data comes real-time impact. If you're ready to unite operations and security teams with a single source of truth and confidently protect your organization from cyber threats, it's time to meet Tanium. To learn more, visit Tanium.com/twit, T-A-N-I-U-M. We thank Tanium so much for supporting Windows Weekly. And we thank you for supporting Windows Weekly. When you go to that address, it tells them, hey, I saw it here. Tanium, TANIUM.com/twit. Thank you, Tanium. Thank you. Now, back to Paul, Mary Jo, and Windows 11. Woohoo!
Hooray!
So you weren't even able to update your Windows while you were on the boat.
No, in fact, one of the things I realized, I had brought a second laptop to take screenshots for the book, and I had used it to do that Rufus install before, so it wasn't really a super clean version of Windows 11 like I needed, so yeah. I actually wasn't able to take screenshots.
Because you couldn't get any of the updates you needed to clean it
yeah.
up.
Yeah. So that was on me. I also wanted to test Android 13 on my Pixel, and I didn't dare. Install that until I got home.
I did, yeah.
I did that from the hotel in Seattle when we got back to Seattle.
There you go.
And wiped out the lab. In fact, I did both there.
Oh, good.
You get back to civilization and everything just works fine. It was nice, you know. It was interesting hitting a website and having it actually load. That was a question.
So you wrote the review of 22H2 before you left?
I don't remember when I wrote this. I might have written it while I was there.
The dateline is the 22nd, so I'm thinking you filed it might have been while I was on there. The trip. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had written a series of articles about all of the new features, and then I decided to kind of collate this into a review. As Mary Jo has pointed out many times, not a lot of big stuff going on in here. I think the only feature that edges a little bit into major feature territory is the new snap functionality, which I think is fantastic. And you could make an argument, I guess, for live captions and maybe some of the accessibility stuff. But yeah, most of it is a drip, drip, drip of very small functional additions. And, you know, if we're being honest with ourselves, just an abject ignoring of the many complaints Windows 10 users have made about Windows 11, and in some cases not ignoring, just coming out and saying, yeah, we're not doing that. You know, yeah, we heard your feedback. Thank you. No, thank you for that. We hear you. We know you want the taskbar to be better. It's not going to be better.
No. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Instagram saying, yeah, we know you don't like it, but too bad.
That's fine.
It's fine. We don't like it either. We don't like it either, but, you know.
I would have cited MTV and said, you know, things change. that's the way the world works. So Windows 11 is interesting because there's some pros and cons, and that hasn't changed. I use it on all of my computers. I prefer it. I like the look and feel. I really do like it. I have to agree with some of the complaints. There are negatives. I mean, they've made it very hard for people to not sign in with a Microsoft account. And there are good reasons for Microsoft wanting you to do that. There are good reasons for you wanting to do that as a user. But I feel like very strongly that people should have that choice, and they're just not interested in choice.
Yeah,
and I think that's kind of what Windows 11 is all about. They have wanted Windows to be simple, like a mobile operating system, for a long time, and they're taking steps. They're not doing a one release where they just get there. I think they at one time dreamt that they could do that, but they are taking steps and moving in that direction. They're just removing choice. By the way, this isn't in my review, but I've been meaning to write this up. Tied to the Microsoft account requirement, there's another weird little change in Windows setup that no one has really noticed or talked about, and that's with regards to OneDrive. So when you sign in with a Microsoft account, one of the subsequent steps will say, hey, do you want to back up some folders with OneDrive? Or at least it used to say that in Windows 10. And you got a choice. You could say, yeah, the desktop, documents, and pictures, or any combination of those. Yes, I'll back those up to OneDrive. And the idea is that if you do that across multiple PCs, say with your pictures folder, you'll have the same pictures on each PC in the pictures folder, right? Because it's backing up to the cloud and syncing to all of your devices. And again, some people may find that very valuable. I don't actually use those folders, but it's a useful thing. But it's something they're taking away the choice on. And so in Windows 11 22H2, at least in the home edition, there's a matrix somewhere I've written down, but I don't remember it exactly. But in 22H2, I want to say, if you have Pro, you have the choice, but you can't choose folders anymore. That was in the previous version. And then with Home, you don't even get the choice. Those folders are backed up, whether you want them to be or not. And so you can change it after the fact. But again, they're kind of slowly dripping away choices. And some of them are high profile, like the Microsoft account thing. Some of them are a little less well known, like the thing I just mentioned. But this is kind of the Windows 11 vibe. Like they're getting rid of choice.
Your conclusion is it's not for enthusiasts. It's for getting things done. Yeah. Crowd.
Yeah. Well, it's for normal people, right? So mainstream people, non-technical people.
But for years, and certainly the people who listen to this show, Windows has been a good choice for enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm. Because Microsoft has always had to try have it both ways. There were always multiple ways to do things. Mm-hmm. This is the difference between Microsoft and Apple, or the Windows and the Mac back in the day. If you could do it on the Mac, there was one way to do it. If you could do it on Windows, there might have been 13 ways to do it. there are still examples of that in Windows. You know, Windows Search, there are at least 7 entry points I can think of off the top of my head. But by and large, that kind of thing's going away. There's another example I'm going to use in the tips part in the back of the book that is another example of how Windows 11 makes doesn't take things away always, but sometimes they just make them a lot harder to find. There are many more steps. There's a lot of that going on as well. So the good news for enthusiasts is Linux exists. No. Is that,
yes, I knew
he said it. Oh, he just said it. He said it.
No, I've always felt this way. When you think technical, non-technical, you know, I always felt like you should, if you're going to disadvantage someone, a developer or audience, you disadvantage the developer. Make it hard on the developer. They're technical. They can fix it. In this case, you know, make it hard on technical users. You know, you can figure out another way.
So you're saying with Stardock and a variety of other ways you can make it better.
Or just because you're smart and you can know how to get there. Like, you can't right-click the taskbar and get to the task manager. But you know what? There are 5 other ways to get there. So relax.
I noticed that myself. I want Alt-Tab to show all the windows and all the workspaces. It doesn't, but it's easy to fix. And I noticed that. You work and play with the settings until you get it to behave the way.
My only complaint at the end of that conversation would just be that one of the other things Microsoft is taking away is sync. And they never did this fully anyway. In a properly constructed system, you would fine-tune Windows exactly the way you wanted it, and then you would set it up on a new computer, and it would say, hey, do you want that exact setup? And you say, yep. And every single little setting would come back. But you have to do it manually every single time. Yeah. So as someone who, you know, reviews a lot of laptops, that's tedious. I realize that's not everybody. But even like something simple like the syncing of wallpaper, it's a nice thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's gone. They got rid of that. That's not a feature anymore in Windows 11.
I read a really interesting article. We've talked about Pluton before, and Microsoft's very vague about Pluton. But a lot of Linux users are saying, oh, Pluton's problematic because it requires, you know, it's harder to install Linux. But again, it's a case that you can turn it off. Mm-hmm. You can disable it just as you would disable secure boot and still install Linux.
This is the TPM conversation from 2003
all
over again.
Yeah.
It's the same conversation.
Although, I should have sent you a link to this article ahead of time because I found an article. I don't know how credible this guy is. It's Gabriel Sieben, I think.
He's an idiot. No, I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Can you send it? Is there a chat thing?
I'll send it to you. The Dangers of Pluton, which is overstated headline. But he does go into... he has 2 kind of parts to the article. One is speculation because there's still a lot of vagueness. But then there's also some incredible, I think, credible detail from Microsoft documents and so forth. And one of the reasons is because it's an AMD co-venture with Microsoft. And AMD has now started shipping mobile Ryzen 6000 chips with Pluton. So he was able to kind of analyze it. One of the things most interesting, though, in this article, I will send you a link to it, is it explains a little bit better Microsoft's requirements for Windows 11. That he has a theory, and it's a theory, but it kind of makes sense when you read this article, that really what Microsoft was saying with Haswell or later and TPM or later is it's ultimately got to kind of support Pluton. And it's a very interesting long article. I'll send you a link to it.
You know what? See, that itself is as artificial as anything else, though, because you could make this argument where you say, well, Pluton is going to happen. It's just starting to happen now. 2 years ago, they announced this, I think. Starting to see the first PCs. And maybe it only runs on Windows 11, right? It actually probably does run on Windows 10. I don't even know for sure. Does he mention whether it runs on 10 as well as 11?
I think it must. I think it must too.
But then again, you could make the case, well, you know, Windows 11 is more secure. Yeah. We're only doing it on Windows 11. It's a
well,
way
and
to
this
get people
is,
to move
I mean,
forward.
The clear and accurate argument for Pluton is it makes it more secure, just like Secure Boot does. His point is though that there are people who can use it like a game. You know, it came from Xbox, and it was originally kind of an anti-cheat DRM solution. And so he says you're going to see applications of this that are less than.
This is just an evolution of TPM, really.
I think so.
You know, TPM was a separate chipset that was, it was probably a bus between it and the microprocessor. I'm sure there were attacks on that bus, and so they said, well, what if we integrated it into the microprocessor? And make the attack surface smaller, that kind of thing. The problem is AMD co-worked on it with Microsoft, which means Intel, despite their early enthusiasm, they're saying now we don't need this because our chips already have functionality like this. And, of course, the real reason is you know, it comes from AMD. We don't want that concession.
Yeah. I will let me read you the one paragraph that does talk about why he thinks Windows 11 requires what it does. Windows 11 by... And he put this as in parenthesis, almost requiring these Pluton technologies, MBEC, TPM 2.0, Secure Boot, and so forth, is in every way trying to get people used to a Pluton Lite experience, as Pluton-y as possible without actually having Pluton yet. He says Windows 11 is a stepping stone to Pluton with security requirements to match. He says with Windows 12, and if it's a three-year cadence in 2024... And with Microsoft clearly being less afraid of cutting off large swaths of old PCs, it would not shock me if Windows 12 makes Pluton a system requirement.
So I don't think they get to do that every 3 years. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't think any Pluton hardware shipped until this past spring.
I don't think there's any.
You're right.
I think it's.
No, it just started shipping. It definitely there is some now in the market.
Yeah, because he's saying because of these Ryzen 6000 mobile chips, he can now kind of write this article. It's interesting.
I don't think Microsoft's customer base would respond in a good fashion.
Well, there's that, and Microsoft is very sensitive. Just look at the back and forth over VBA in Word documents. and the macros.
We're going to get to that. That wasn't as back and forth as I thought it was, by the way. So we're going to talk about that.
Same.
But I think pressure from users did impact Microsoft in that case. Yes. I guess it's particular users.
No.
It's not as bad as you think.
It was them miscommunicating more than anything. Okay.
All they wanted to do was change the UI. We'll get to that. So, anyway, the Pluton thing is interesting. I think he kind of says what I was in my head was that this is like next-gen TPM in a sense.
Yes, exactly. Precisely.
And thus, this conversation, because, from a OSS Linux perspective, you would read this and think, yeah, I know why they're doing this. You know, they don't want me putting Linux on that expensive new Lenovo or HP or whatever it is I'm buying. With TPM and that and Secure Boot, actually, there's a period of time where that's not possible or it's not easy. But it seems like, it's happened, right? I mean, I don't think we really have any issues getting Linux on PCs anymore.
I don't know if you're in the Discord. I pasted it in the Discord, Paul. I'll also paste it in the chat, and maybe you'll get it from one of those two places. I don't know who Gabriel Sibin is.
I don't either.
It seemed upon reading the
publication?
His own blog.
Oh, his own blog.
Yeah. It seemed upon reading it to be... fairly
not crazy.
And fairly well informed. And he has a section at the end which is for the crazy part. But
security is not something that you finish and are done with, right? What's the matter?
Are you reading it now, Mary Jo? Is that
Gabriel Sibin? Hi, I'm 20 years old. I love doing projects every time with technology.
Wow.
I'm in my engineering club at my local community college.
But you know what?
Nice.
Who cares?
Good for you.
We traveled with Rafael Rivera. He was a... Right?
No, I don't think it's bad. I'm just like kids. Stunned.
Those are the kids.
I'm stunned at like how much he knows at 20.
I'm really not.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
That's
the people. When I was 20, I was writing into Amiga World magazine with a scathing creed about.
Dear, you don't seem to understand that the Amiga is just about games. If you would just wake up.
You know, it was similar level of discourse.
Yeah, pretty much.
You tell me, Paul, and Mary Jo, when you read it. I was impressed. Okay. I did not know he was 20 when I read it, but
yeah, that's great. I clicked on the about, and I'm like, wait, what?
Sure, it's good. But he's done. It's a fairly thorough look at it, and maybe because he's 20, he's more concerned about DRM and
the future, right?
Yeah, and the future. Yeah. Speaking of the future, Paul, let's talk about Windows 12 rumors.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask about Windows 12 rumors because I know that this is something that you folks talked about in our absence.
We did.
Oh,
we spent a lot of time on that.
I'm interested in the possibility of a return to a 3-year release cadence, as our friend SS has pointed out. This is a good time frame for new releases of Windows. I think that new features appear too often in Windows, and so, 3 years, whatever. The Windows 12 thing, though, really? We're just going to start ratcheting. That part seems a little more rumory to me. So I'm just curious where you guys landed on it.
Yeah. So on last week's Windows Weekly, the person who originated this report, Zach Bowden from Windows Central, was on the show. And we talked about his reporting and what his sources had told him. So he's hearing that, yes, we're going to go back to every 3 year for a quote major update, right? So the next major update of Windows will happen in 2024. It was originally going to happen in 2023, he had heard.
Right.
We're going to wait till 2024. It may or may not be christened Windows 12. We're not sure yet. It could be. The code name of it is Next Valley NV. I had heard that name too. I had heard that code name too, and I wasn't sure exactly if it was going to be like Windows 11 22H something, or if it was going to be a whole new version. In between, this is the concerning part. In between this every 3 year thing, Microsoft is going to be rolling out new features of some kind to Windows up to quarterly. So at least four times a year, no, as many as four times a year, they could roll out new features for the operating system and things that are known internally as moments. That's such a PR term, right?
Like, well, I'm going to have a moment, all right.
Yeah.
That I can
we don't
guarantee.
Know, like, Zach was saying he thinks it's more likely to be something like a UI type update, something more minor, something
in File Explorer.
Yeah. Something like IT won't flip out, right? Like, and just be like, wait, what are you guys doing? Right. We speculated, could it be a case of these features will be off by default and then people can turn them on and IT can turn them on. He still hears, that 22H2 is definitely obviously going to happen. Next year, he doesn't know if there'll be a 23H2, but he's thinking no. He's hearing that.
I'd be shocked if they didn't have something they just called that.
Yeah, he's hearing that whole H2 thing is over. Like,
let me ask you about this, because I'm sorry, because I was part of this, this is definitely what it went through my mind. Yeah. One of the things that you and I both have been weirded out by with the Insider program is how they've moved away from anything being tied to any version of Windows, right? Yeah. It's weird, right? Because we're just so used to this kind of milestone-based, system where eventually the thing RCs and RTMs and we have this thing and it never changes.
Yep.
Maybe that's what they've been building up to, right? In other words, you get rid of versions and then you introduce, like, we've tested these features in the Insider program. They went from dev to beta to release preview and now they're out in the world. And then you do it again and again. Maybe this is the system. And if it is, I want nothing to do with this. this is so weird to me.
I don't know if you remember in February when Panos did a blog post saying, in the future, we're just going to be rolling out Windows features in a variety of ways of various times. And people are like, wait a minute. Like, you just said you were going to update this once a year. Now you're saying we could just introduce anything we want at any time we want in any way we want. And when I asked Microsoft about Zach's story, they pointed me to that blog post and said, we already said all this, right? Like, we told you guys we were going to be rolling out Windows features at multiple points in the year and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But as far as I know, this year, the only time they have done that so far is around February, March, when they rolled out a whole bunch of features together in cumulative update. They came out with Android subsystem for Windows, the first iteration of that. They added like the weather widget on the taskbar at that time, right? And since then, I don't think they've done
so. There were others
like that
were smaller. Remember there were people and companies like Mozilla did this who were defeating the default apps interface. They shipped an update to prevent that.
Right.
Whether you would call that a feature update, you know, whatever.
Or a fix, right, yeah.
A fix. But I think the maybe this was part of that February update you were talking about, but there was also they made that change where there's actually a make default button now for browsers. And all it does is change two of the file associations and the protocol associations.
Yeah, that may have been later. That may have been after
It may
that.
Have been,
yeah.
a, I think that might have been a different one, a different time, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I mean, we talk about this all the time. They can literally and do literally change or upgrade the operating system at any time. So actually, the thing that's, well, the, I guess the thing that ties this to the past today is we are going to get a 22H2.
We are.
Right? And maybe what they're saying, and we just talked about it. There's really not much going on there. Could they not break those updates into four different segments and deliver them at different times throughout a year? And we just keep calling this thing Windows 11 or whatever.
Right.
And don't worry about the version. I mean,
they could.
It makes it hard to talk about it. That's the problem.
It does. Yes, it does. And also, if you're a developer and you happen to be targeting a certain version of Windows 11, some things are turned on, some things are off, right?
Technically, that shouldn't be an issue anymore. Although, but for sure, people do that.
Right.
That's something they're trying to walk away from, too.
Right. The other thing we know nothing about, because they won't even acknowledge the story has any merit, is what does it mean in terms of how long versions are supported of Windows, right? So you would assume if they're going to come out with a new version of Windows in 2024 and call it Windows 12, let's just say, if they do that, that the support time frame will start ticking then. If that's what's going to happen, that would mean they would service and support a version of Windows for 3 years instead of like 18 months or however many months, right? Like that they do now. But so we don't know that.
There's precedent for that. I could say with relative certainty that what you will not see is a 10-year support time frame split into five-year blocks of mainstream and extended support. You know, Windows 11 1.0 or Windows 11 whatever will not be supported for 10 years. Although Windows 10 was.
I know.
Right. I think,
and we also don't know. Then there's the LTSC, the long-term servicing channel versions of Windows. We don't know what this new schedule would do to that or how that would look going forward. There's a lot of questions, especially for IT people who are like, wait a minute, I just thought we were doing the one-year update thing, and now like suddenly we're adding features whenever we want, plus going to a three-year update thing now. You know, it's like, what are we doing here? And so far, there's been absolutely no communication from the Windows team about any changes, any of this at all. Maybe they're saving that for a future event, or maybe they just will never announce it and just put it in some random blog post at the end and people will stumble onto it.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of questions for sure.
Tons of questions. Yep.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
That's where we left it. Yeah, so I mean, they haven't denied Zach's story. They haven't confirmed it. All they said is, we did say we were going to be rolling out features at any time we wanted. We said that in February.
But you still have to, you know, one of the points behind Windows 11, just using that brand, was we wanted to get people excited about upgrading and buying new computers, that kind of thing, right? So you lose that. If you don't have a Windows 12 and you stop revving Windows 11 and it's just Windows 11, but with all these new features... It's a harder marketing message for Microsoft, right?
And it is.
PC makers, I would think.
Like, say you get a new PC. Say you get a new PC next year, right? And it's running Windows 11. But it's running a different Windows 11 than we all are running right now, because it'll have a whole bunch of new features that are not reflected in the brand. Like,
I mean, it won't. And then you'll have to get those features by running Windows Update, which, you know, honestly,
which you could.
Is kind of the experience anyway.
It is, right? Yeah.
So Apple is, I think Apple's instructional in this, because they did OS X for a long time. And they finally said, okay, now it's 11, now it's 12, now it's 13.
Yep.
But they did 10.123, you know, and they cheated.
I mean, Windows would always have, there'd be some internal version number that developers could check. I mean, assume. There's going to be a way. It's about consumers. It's about messaging. Yeah. And I think that Apple decided, no, we need to have a OS 10, OS 11, OS 12. Mm-hmm. We need to doing it every year. And I think that probably is a marketing. I mean, obviously it's a marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But you need, you need something to show people and explain it very quickly. Yeah. Not, hey, look at all the stuff we did to Windows 11 since last year.
So whether this point, I mean, they really may not know now. At some point,
they may not.
Marketing pressures are going to, Chris Capicella is going to come in the room, throw up in the door and say, we need Windows 12.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I mean, lived in a world where,
I was just going to say, Panos takes his cues from Apple pretty much. So,
yeah, we know that, right?
Apple does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever Apple does, he's going to do it. Like, that's what we're going to go do.
Web browsers are in the 100s now on version numbers, right? There's no reason Windows couldn't just accept, we're going to do one every four months or every 1 year.
That's different. That's because browsers want to hide that. Browsers, they want to always be up to date, and they want a way for you to reasonably see whether you're up to date. But they don't want to announce there's a new version all the time. They kind of want it to be
just happen,
right?
But you do notice, there's a little yellow.
I'm sorry,
or red
I got too
blurb.
Excited. My watch says, "Have you taken a hard fall?" No, I did not fall.
You're like, we're talking about Windows 12.
I was waving my arms around, and it got all excited. Sorry.
That's funny.
So I do think that it may completely be possible, just as it was back when Microsoft said, this is the last version of Windows, no more numbers, that they're going to change their mind due to market
Jerry
conditions.
Jerry Nixon will never live down.
I know. I feel bad for him.
Yeah. It's just,
And remember when Microsoft said,
and I want to be clear, I'm not saying that they're copying Apple. I'm just saying that Apple has seen, I think.
Oh, no, I want to be really clear. They definitely are.
I am saying it.
Okay. All right. Never mind. They are. They're definitely copying Apple.
They definitely are copying Apple.
Well, there's no industry best practices for stuff like this anymore.
No.
That's right.
I love the dot thing. That's an Apple thing, right? 11 dot blah, blah, blah.
They did that for a long time, but they stopped. Well, I mean, they still do.
I liked that.
Those are interim updates now. And then they do a big number update. And I think it's going to be yearly. Although, again, this always it changes.
Yeah, that's
it just changes, right? It's, today, let's do it this way.
Yeah. They took a one-year mulligan. Remember the iPhone came out and they were like, oh, we're too busy with the iPhone.
They skipped the iPhone.
We're going to skip this year.
They just... Yeah, we are on Mac OS version 12 with Monterey. Yeah. And I think Ventura is 13. I'm pretty sure it's 13.
I'm sure it is. So. That's fine.
I'm shrugging for those of you only listening.
If you can only hear the shuffling of material, that's his shoulder.
Let's see. You want to talk about, since we started the browser conversation... Do you want to,
just as a quick one. I haven't even written this up. I just saw that they announced this. You know, Microsoft Edge, that team has been on a real program of trying to reduce resources and improve performance and, less disk footprint and all this, because it's based on Chromium, which is, kind of a pig of a thing. And they've done a pretty good job with it.
It sounds like a Disney song. I don't know why. Yeah. It's a big of a thing and a big of a thing.
I don't agree with everything they've done. I don't like the tab sleeping functionality. I'm sure some people love it. To me, that just adds a delay. And so I'm sure it reduces RAM resources, but it also slows performance to me. So the thing that they just announced was yet another feature along these lines. This is coming in Edge 102. Which actually might have just been released or is about to be released. And they're automatically compressing disk cache, which they say will both improve performance and reduce the disk footprint. By the way, speaking of browser cache, I don't know if you guys follow our contemporaries over at CNET, but aside from reviewing movies, this site has now turned into the browser cache tip site of the world. every other article they write now is, hey, have we reminded you? You got to clear your browser cache. You have to do it on your iPhone. You have to do it on your Android. You have to do it on your...
Really?
This is all they write about.
You weren't supposed to do this.
I have never cleared my browser cache.
I know. This is in my feed every day now. I don't want to get rid of CNET, but I do want to get rid of this tip. And it's almost like every day. And it's a different article. It will say, hey, Android user, here's the one tip that will speed up the performance of your phone. And I look at it. It's like, yep. Browser cache.
Wow.
Anyway, Microsoft's addressing it, so maybe this is something you won't need to deal with manually.
Huh.
Although I've never once, I don't think, every once in a while, like the tech person at work will say something like, I'll be like, hey, the site's not working. And they're like, have you cleared your cache? And I'm like, right. No, I'm normal. What are you talking about? Cleared my cache. Why would I clear my cache? Anyway,
Flush your DNS cache if you haven't done that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Let me know when the flushing's done. Come on back.
I think IT people have taped to the wall a list of things to tell people.
Responses.
Have you tried turning it on and off again? Have you browsed the flusher cache or flushed the whatever?
Every time I've done it, I've had to look up how to do it. This is something I just don't do. Yeah.
You shouldn't have to do it. No, but I do think it is not unusual for the browser cache to become corrupted and cause problems. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the same thing.
I had to look up how to, you can delete your Windows Update cache. And sometimes that cures problems with Windows Update.
Sometimes
I actually had to
helps.
Do that recently. But again, you have to kind of look that thing up because it's not something you do regularly. And you think, God, you think there'd be a little button right there in the UI, but there isn't.
P.S. Chops in our IRC says, clearing the cache is a reflexive suggestion when no real solution exists.
There you go. and you're like, it feels faster.
Exactly. It's remember you used to say, oh, have you defragged? You got to defrag.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, you got to defrag. Actually, don't just defrag, but move that application to the front of the defragging space.
Exactly. You know? Oh, God.
Yeah, that will do it.
Thank God.
The disk doesn't have to travel. The head doesn't have to travel as far.
You'll notice a massive improvement. And by the way, every time I get my car washed, it's about 5 miles an hour faster. I don't understand it.
It works well.
The radio's louder, too. It's nice.
Yes. All right. Time to take a break and tell you about something that really will make a difference in your day-to-day operations, especially if you're the person who gets woken up in the middle of the night. New Relic. I know lots of devs. I've met many on the cruise. I know you're the most curious people, the people who want to explore the newest tech. Those are the kind of people who love New Relic. Engineers love New Relic because it gives you the data you need about the things you build. It shows what's really happening in your software life cycle. It's the single place, the famous one single pane of glass, to see data from your entire stack. One monitor. That's all you need. New Relic pinpoints issues down to the line of code so you know why problems are happening. You can resolve them quickly. This is like a debugger on steroids. But it's more than that, though. It's literally a bunch of tools, 16 different tools to change your life. That's why dev and ops teams at DoorDash and GitHub and Epic Games, more than 14,000 companies, use New Relic to debug and improve their software. It's not enough just to say, well, it's operating fine on this machine. You got to see the stack. When teams come together around data, it allows you to triage problems, be confident in your decisions, and reduce the time needed to implement resolutions. And you're doing it using data, not opinions. And if you're an engineer, I know that resonates. Use the data platform made for the curious, made for you. Right now, this is such a deal. I don't know. You've got to do this. You can access the entire New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data every month free forever. This is not a trial. This is free forever. You don't even need to give them a credit card. The entire platform, 100 gigabytes of data a month, free forever. Sign up at newrelic.com/windows. NEWRELIC, New Relic. You know the name. I'm sure you've heard it. You've heard me talk about it. And maybe you've heard your colleagues talk about it. You should try it free, no credit card required. newrelic.com/windows. newrelic.com/windows. On we go with the show. Let's see. We've done earnings, learnings. We've done Windows 11 and 12. I think it's time for a bigger number. Microsoft 365.
Yeah.
What is there to
say?
So
we kind of alluded to the VBA thing. You know, this is like so much else in life where you kind of look into it and it's not as dramatic as it sounds. But, you know, Microsoft announced maybe back in February earlier this year that they were going to start blocking internet-acquired VBA macros by default in Office. This sounds perfectly reasonable. And then you heard that the customers complained and they said, oh, now we're not going to do it again. The Google Threat Analysis Group leader, Shane Huntley, exploded in outrage when Microsoft said they were not going to do
as
this.
As did Steve Gibson, yes.
Except that's not what Microsoft said.
Dual outrage.
That's not what he said. That's okay. Not what they said.
Okay.
What the problem was, the user experience they had come up with for the blocking macros was not great. So they said, we're still going to do this. We just need a little bit of time to fix the UX. And they fixed it. And now as of today, VBA macros are blocked by default.
Yahoo! So, yep. As they should be.
But it wasn't the flip-flop that, you know, it sort of sounded like.
No.
Did they delay it?
They delayed it. They actually, okay. They started rolling it out in late June. They halted the rollout.
Because people
fixed the UI.
Yeah.
And then just then it's back the way
it was. But the point is, and Steve Gibson made this point yesterday, mm-hmm. if you care, there's group policy edit. There's all sorts mm-hmm. of ways for you to change this default behavior.
That's right. This is, or to, before it was the default behavior, to make it the default behavior for your organization. If this was outrageous to you, you could have fixed this 2 years ago.
Yeah. It's not. And Steve's other point, which I think is really well taken, is the best way to avoid this, start signing your documents. Whoever's creating your spreadsheets with the vertical, mm-hmm. not vertical blank application, with the Visual Basic application macros.
Vertical blank?
No, I'm sorry. Have you heard of brain fog? VB for me, I don't know, for some reason, VBI, vertical blank interval is in my brain.
Okay. No, that's good. Yeah.
It's because years ago that was something that happened with CRT monitors, and I wrote
that's
a program.
That's how the Atari program sprites.
Exactly.
You know, they took advantage of the VBI.
Exactly. And anyway. I wrote the first multitasking program for the Mac using the VBI. But anyway.
Ooh, nice.
VBA, which is much more modern. Surprisingly.
Well, is it? Yeah, maybe.
If you look at that ridiculous flowchart they published, if you sign the document and you sign the macro, mm-hmm. then it will run.
Well,
and you
I think
should.
The issue there would be a person out in the world or in your organization who found a macro out on the internet, downloaded it to the computer.
Don't do that.
Yeah. I think that was the issue.
And
those
there was
not being
well,
signed.
And there and Steve talked about this, but there have been one of the very first viruses used as technique, and there are modern viruses. Was it FOMOLITE or something that uses VBA macros? So
man, people thought VBA wasn't that powerful. Come on, guys, wake up!
Don't. If you're gonna use them, and I understand businesses need to, you can either enable them in group policy edit. I wouldn't. I would insist they be signed. Then you know they're legit, right. And it'll run flawlessly without effort, without a click of a button or anything. And that's how. You know, anyway, sorry. New story just came in, just over the transom.
All right.
Now that I've had COVID, I can go to Ignite.
Not really.
No?
Well, sort of.
It's going to be a live event, I hear. Oh, but no press.
Right. No press. Yeah, you know, it's very odd. This whole thing is odd. So today they posted on the Ignite website, myignite.microsoft.com, the dates. So we know the dates of Ignite, which is their IT pro conference every year, is October 12th to 14th. There's also a section in the FAQ about a big in Seattle in-person experience.
Yeah,
like highly interactive, immersive at the Seattle Convention Center.
Come on, Paul, let's go. What could possibly go wrong?
Innovators, influencers, executives, partners, all invited. And then I ping Microsoft. I'm like, what about press? And they said, press virtual only.
Oh,
so it's
because we're sick. We're sick we're people.
Dirty. It's a hybrid
we're dirty,
event.
Dirty monkeys.
We don't clean.
Yeah, hybrid event, but press cannot attend.
We've been watching you guys during the COVID thing, and I got to tell you,
yeah,
not you guys super are impressed. Not
really, yeah,
not super the dirty press is not allowed.
Yep.
Oh,
he's throwing feces at the wall. I don't know.
But it's all the topics we know and love. They have a topic list: productivity, collaboration,
October's
business applications.
Kind of interesting, though, isn't it?
Yeah, AI, automation, IoT, mixed reality. So we'll probably hear more about what they're doing with the live mesh stuff, Teams mesh stuff, industry clouds. Like the whole gamut of stuff is going to be in the Seattle.
I wonder if that conference center was booked in November when they typically do it.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah, I wonder. Also,
Early date. This is not the normal.
Yeah, this is
about a month earlier than it has been typically.
Although it'll be easier for travel for most people, you know. Right?
I mean, true. There's going to be in-person events in other cities, not just Seattle. So they've done this with Build, and they did this with Inspire. They had some smaller in-person events in global cities, but the Seattle one's one we want, and we can't go.
So. I love this. Live from Seattle, immerse yourself in our flagship in-person tech event where you can interact with experts and peers and experience portions of the global broadcast. Space will be limited. No press allowed.
Yeah.
You don't have to meet the dirty press.
Oh, man. Yeah. You don't want those guys milling around with their pencils in their ears and their little notebooks.
You know what? We could go.
Yeah.
We could
just
pay.
Don't say,
to
yeah,
go.
Just pay. Yeah. Mm-mm. Be a developer.
Pay to go to,
Ignite?
What?
No, I mean, the in-person part's going to be paid, for sure, right?
Ignite like, is a partner event, right? It's not a developer event.
No,
it's an IT pro developer
IT pro.
IT.
But also, okay. Also developer, yeah. Some
it is.
Content.
Okay.
Yeah, there is, yep.
We'll see what develops here. I was hoping I'd be going back to Seattle in October. But then again, do I want to be in a conference center, which...
I know.
Like a non-moving boat?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no clean air going in there. I can tell you that.
No.
Yeah. Didn't they used to do Ignite in Florida every year?
Yeah.
They've done it in a lot of different cities.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's been all over.
Well, we were supposed to go to New Orleans in 2020.
I remember that didn't happen. Yeah.
I don't remember what happened that year, but that didn't go down.
Me neither. It's all a blur.
Something happened.
I feel like I'm owed a trip to New Orleans, you know,
me
frankly.
Too. I know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now that I've had COVID, I'm throwing away the mask and I'm going to as many in-person events as I can.
Nice.
It's like, hi.
Okay. So
my
name is maybe
Leo.
This is a weird thing to say, but in our little group thing that we did on the boat, you know, it's been it's been almost 3 years since I've been to an in-person event. And Mary Jo and I in New York and then on work trips to different cities. I mean, we did this in London one time, have had meetups, you know.
And I love them.
There could be dozens of people. There could be hundreds of people.
I love them.
You kind of forget. The concerns I would have had about an in-person event like that a few years ago would have been more just, you know, dealing with the crowd and whatever.
Yeah.
But you kind of forget.
I tear my clothing off. And
yeah, there was a moment early on in that thing where we had, I don't know how many people in the room, 50 or 100 or whatever it was. And, you know, it kind of concluded and then people come up and they want to talk to you. And, you know, they get really close to you.
There are some close talkers. There were some close talkers.
Yeah.
I remember vividly.
There was one person I remember I could feel their breath on my face.
Yes.
And I was like,
I felt spit drops in one conversation.
It's like,
only backing up.
You're like, oh God.
Oh, help me,
this
Obi-Wan.
Yeah. No, it's something we're going to have to ease into this. It's like, it will be okay.
This was the meetup I most enjoyed. This was the one we did in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have to press a button. Hold on. Oh. And this was, it was Microsofties came out to visit us. And there's Alex Gumbel.
Nice.
There's Paul.
Oh, this is the one we just did. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is.
I'm like, I recognize all those guys.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
This was a really nice, small little group, a lot of fun. That was before the cruise. I don't, let me see if, I don't think I have any pictures of any of the big events. Let me see if somebody's posted some because we now have an album.
I really didn't think to take too many pictures. I know.
I wish I had.
At that group dinner, I finally walked around with a camera, but then I got distracted and I stopped taking pictures.
Well, there was so much love in the room, and that was
it was nice. It was really
nice. Part of the problem. This was pretty much my status most of the time. Donald Duck talking to By the way, this couple got engaged. This couple got engaged on the Mendenhall Glacier. He got down on his knees and gave Jolie a ring and all that. So
they had to do it. I think they were supposed to do it on the glacier, but they weren't able to go.
Oh, they couldn't
do it. They did it.
Here's a picture of the crowd. Paul and me.
Nice
little auditorium.
A lot of nice. John Wilkes Booth is up there in the top right.
Six Semper, Windows 12. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, this is... No, that wasn't us.
That was when Leo and I were doing. That was a slightly different event.
I didn't know we did a dance performance. That's great. It was a lot of fun. Lots of pictures. This is the shared album that we invited people to submit to. Some great... This one guy brought a very nice Nikon Z7, I think, and got some amazing animal photos. Mark Phillips, I think his name is. Let me see if I can... Mark Mitchell, I'm sorry.
Yeah, look at those otters right there.
Yeah, I mean, just some amazing
sea lions. Yep.
Pictures. There's some otters. He had a very, very nice camera.
These animals always remind me that how superfluous human beings are. Like, if we just disappeared...
Here's Paul before his coffee.
Yeah, that was me taking a bath.
Some really amazing photos. Oh, look at this. This is one of my favorites.
It's incredible. Oh, wow.
Yeah. That again... is with the Nikon Z7. Mark Mitchell, good job. Yep. I knew Mark had a good camera because he came up to me and said, "What camera did you bring, Leo?" I said,
In case you thought you were going to come out on top of this one.
Yeah.
Look at this one. Oh, my gosh. This is amazing. That is... Yeah.
Wow.
Look me in the eye, buddy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, everybody who came for that trip. It was an amazing...
The wildlife stuff up there is
it's beautiful.
Astonishing.
Yeah. Did you get up at 7 a.m. for the lumberjack show?
No, I got up at 7 a.m. for the wildlife thing, and then we did like a seafood feast kind of a deal.
I think Lisa, if she had known, might have gone. I don't know.
Sure. It looks like the set of a Friday the 13th movie.
Look at the axes and the chainsaws. This was Ketchikan, which was my favorite.
Yeah,
town.
Beautiful.
I really love Ketchikan. Yeah.
I loved all of it. I thought it was... I loved it up there.
Yay. You get to go next time, Mary Jo.
We'll see.
We have successfully tucked her out of it.
I'm a little scared of the COVID event.
Well, yeah. You know, we're not doing it again until COVID is...
Of course. Yeah.
Of course, that's what we said about this one. But, yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, look at that.
Look at that.
That is incredible. A bear having lunch.
No, it looked... It looked like a blast, and it looked amazing. Yeah. The food looked great. All your food pictures look great.
Yeah. I'm looking at all the drink and food that Paul and Stephanie and Richard Campbell are consuming.
Mm-hmm. If Richard Campbell's there's drinks.
Wow. What a party you guys had. Man. All right, let's talk developers. We talked about Ignite, but there is a .NET conference coming up.
Yeah, so this is a virtual conference. They do these throughout the year, .NET Conf, they call it. It's a virtual conference one day. The next one is August 9th. It's going to focus on .NET MAUI, which is that cross-platform developer framework that targets Windows, Mac, OS, iOS, and Android. So it's all day. It's free. You can just sign up for that at any time. And the other one, Mary Jo might know this. There was some Power Platform. There was an interview with the corporate vice president from Power Platform.
Charles Lamanna, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said that this business was now a $2 billion business annually, which I don't think was new. I think they might have said this early in the year. Mm-hmm. But anyway, over 7 million monthly active users and 72% growth year over year by revenue.
So you know what's the craziest thing about that 7 million number? I don't think he gave the right number for his own business.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because I know. I'm like, I did a search on it because I'm like, only 7 million? And I see Q1 2022, 20 million monthly active users of Pirate Platform.
Oops.
So I'm like, what?
All right.
The
so I'm
heck?
Wondering if he didn't mean a particular, maybe he was actually talking about a particular part.
One of the parts of it. I agree.
Yeah, probably.
Like maybe Power Apps or something.
That's what I was thinking. It was probably Power Apps.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's my
Power
guess
Automate,
too.
But that was my guess. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. All because right. when I saw that number, I'm like, that number seems wrong. But he's the head of the Power Platform, so you would assume he would give you the right number.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I kind of like, you know, Microsoft, of course, is built on developer stuff, right? So the low code, no code thing is something they've been part of, but they kind of expand that because they have Visual Studio, right? And professional programming languages like C# and so forth. So they refer to this market as no code, low code, and pro code.
Oh,
Lord.
Like,
that's great.
Yeah.
No, that's
Which
are you? That's low, no, or pro?
I'm faux code.
That's my kind
faux
of code.
Faux code. Nice.
That's my kind of code.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Did, that was a good interview. Yeah.
Did Rich Campbell finish his .NET book? I'm just curious.
Did I brand him a little too much about that?
There were fingers flying. Let's put it that way.
I took a 2-year hiatus on my programming Windows series to wait for him to finish writing the book, and then he didn't. And so I said, screw it. I'm just going to keep going.
And that was cute. That was funny. A little back and forth there.
I told him I'd help him. You know, I want to see it. I want to read it. He talked to everybody. He talked to all of the major players.
So is it still in progress, or he did flip you off when you asked him about it?
As Richard and I discussed actually before that day, because I had this interaction with Raphael as well, I said, you know, one way to define a friend is they tell you to go F yourself and you just laugh.
Yes. Yes.
And when you have that kind of interaction, it's not meant in an antagonistic way.
It's that kind of we took it that way. Actually, I wasn't there. It was reported back to me.
Oh, that's right.
By then I said, I don't think I should be hanging out with you guys. Is there any, asking for a friend, is there any Xbox news?
There's only one thing.
Last week we had Xbox news on the show. I just want you to know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, but who introduced it? Was it you or
not
someone
me,
else?
Not me, obviously. No.
Zach? Who did it?
I think Zach and Rich both had some Xbox stuff to add.
All right, so
that's nice.
Tell me which of these sounds better. Microsoft has made a change to the Xbox Series X and S consoles, the new ones, and they have reduced boot time by 25%. Amazing, right? That's amazing.
It is.
Or Microsoft has quietly made a change to the Xbox Series X and S consoles that reduces boot time by 5 seconds.
There we go.
Oh, boy.
Because that's like, wait, 5 seconds? That doesn't sound very good. Except 5 seconds is 25%
of the time. Is 25%. That's what,
So they've actually reduced it from 20 to 15 seconds. So actually, that's a pretty big deal. It's lame the way they did it. They created a shorter boot animation.
Oh, so it doesn't boot faster. They just the animation is shorter.
It literally still boots faster. But the because the animation was actually taking too much time.
We were waiting for the animation to complete before we could play a game. That's dopey.
Yep.
That's so dopey. Oh, my God.
Now, the other caveat to this is the Xbox consoles, including Xbox One, I believe, can operate in one of two modes. So the default is something called Energy Saver, where when you're done, it actually does shut down and you have to boot it up. And that, you know, takes a little while. The other mode, which honestly I think most people probably use, is called standby, and that works like a PC. You don't actually turn it off. It goes to sleep. And while it's asleep, it can kind of dribble down updates and everything. And the advantage of that, it sounds like it's obvious, but just in case it's not, is if you don't do that, you'll turn on your PC or your Xbox and we'll say, hey, we have a 2 gig download or update we have to install. You can do it now, or you can just play offline. How does that sound? So you have to do it, you know. So what you what happens is you hit that once, and then you say, "Yeah, I think I'm going to switch this to low or standby mode."
I want this thing
in the background.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that, which is what I do, you'll never actually notice this because you don't really boot the console almost ever. It's not like a Windows PC. Like Windows PCs, you actually reboot those pretty often every month. Xboxes, I did it because when I left my office to go on that trip with the boat, I unplugged the the power strip, which, you know, has everything here. So my Xbox actually did turn off. So I have.
Paul, we don't recommend that method for rebooting your machines anymore. You know?
Well, I'll tell you, I rebooted it and I had to install a damn update before I could play video games. So that's
I did the same thing, though. That's the only time I've ever shut down my computers. I was going to be gone for a week, so I shut everything, including the Xbox.
Yeah, you know, who knows? Like a house get hit by lightning or something.
Yeah. Actually, good idea. Yeah, take it off the power.
Just take it off
completely.
Off the power.
Yeah. Good.
That's all
thinking.
I got.
That's it.
5 seconds. 5 seconds.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, if that's all you're going to give us, I think we're going to go to the back of the book. We've got a tip of the week, an app pick of the week, an enterprise pick of the week, a couple of them, and our beer of the week, Brain Fog. It's a Seattle. No. It's a Seattle treat.
I feel like I've seen that.
Our show today is brought to you by those good folks at IT Pro TV, longtime friends of the network. Personal friends. Tim and Don are fantastic. They started as IT trainers in a classroom, but they realized they could do so much a better job, kind of like we do TWIT, online video, online tests, online configuration of Windows servers in the browser so you can really practice with this stuff. IT Pro TV is the place to get the IT knowledge you need, whether it's to get your first job in IT, to keep your job in IT, to certify or recertify. And let me tell you, we talk all the time about the individuals going to IT Pro TV. They have a team platform that is fantastic. You know, if you've got a business that you're kind of reliant on your IT team, they've got to be up to date on security, on networking, on everything to keep your business a success. So, but you want to give them IT training they're actually going to use, right? You don't want to, it's not like socks at Christmas where you go, oh, thanks, great. No, you want them to get excited about this. And I can promise you they will, because IT Pro TV's content is so engaging, so binge-worthy. In fact, 80% of people who watch videos on IT Pro TV actually finish them. There's a very, very low drop-off rate because you're learning and you're having fun doing it. The tech industry is constantly changing. You want to make sure, this is really important, that you're getting IT training that's up to date. This is more up to date than any school, more up to date than any book, because they have 7 studios. They're running all day, Monday through Friday, creating new content, updating software, updating exams, updating threats, so that you're getting the latest content. In fact, 5,800 hours of binge-worthy content, technical skills to compliance to even soft business skills. You'll get the training and certifications for your team done all in one place. Everything they need, every vendor, every skill, Microsoft, Cisco, Linux, Apple, security, cloud, and on and on and on. The interface for the IT Pro TV business plan is the dashboard's great. You can track team results, manage seats. You can assign and unassign team members. You can create new groups, small groups, assign a specific group. You don't even have to assign a full course. You can assign individual episodes. All the episodes about 20 to 30 minutes. So you can say, hey, this is an area I really want you all to focus on, you know, or you, Smithers, you need to watch this. That happens sometimes. So you'll get, because of their advanced reporting, immediate insights into your team's viewing patterns. You can see their progress over any period of time. You get visual reports so you can justify the spend to the higher-ups. So whether it's for individuals learning to get into IT or learning about IT or getting that better job, or it's for your business where you've got a whole team you want to train, you need IT Pro TV. Give your team the IT development platform. They need to level up their skills and enjoy the journey. They will. They'll love it. They'll thank you for it. It's not socks on Christmas. For teams of 2 to 1,000, a volume discount started 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/windows. And yes, there's an offer code. This is a great one, too. WW30. Make sure you mention it to your IT Pro TV account executive. You'll get 30% off or more on a business plan. And for individuals, too. WW30. Applies to you too. itpro.tv/windows. Thank you, IT Pro TV, for supporting Windows Weekly and the work we do here. And thank you, you Windows Weekly dozers, for supporting us by going to that address. Because if you go there, they know, oh, yeah, Paul and Mary Jo sent us, itpro.tv/windows. Going to put Paulie on the spot. It's time for your tip of the week, Mr. Thurrott. Sir.
Let me unmute. Sorry.
Oh, okay. he was so quiet.
You know, it's hard when you're in any industry because then you see how other people report or write about it or do anything with it, and, you know, it's off. So I used to work in banking, for example, and you would see, like, bank robbery movies. You'd be like, yeah, no, it doesn't work like that. That's not how that works. It would just kind of ruin it for you, you know?
Yeah.
So I was reading the New York Times this morning like an idiot, and there's an article about the default text settings you should turn off right away. So, okay, that sounds interesting. And it was a super high-level thing. It kind of, you know, iPhone, Android, Facebook, Amazon, and I think they meant Ring. They said Nest, which maybe should have been the first thing, you know, to make me wonder about the quality of what I was reading. And then I noticed they had Windows. I thought, okay, what do they got for Windows? And it is just the language they use and just the bareness of this information. Windows comes with a host of data sharing settings that are turned on by default that help Microsoft advertisers and websites learn more about us.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
The switches to toggle those settings can be found by opening the settings menu and clicking on privacy and security and then general. So first of all, there's nothing called the settings menu in Windows. Okay. The settings app, I think, is what you mean. I don't know how someone would find it based on the way you wrote this.
Clearly a Mac user. That's yeah, what it is, you, right?
Yeah. But if you go to this thing and you actually, and there's no general anymore. Well, actually, there is a general, but.
Oh, it's Brian Chen. Yeah.
There are approximately 1,100 privacy settings in this section of settings. And God help you figuring that out. So this is such a complicated topic that there's an entire chapter about it in my book about Windows. Yeah. It's complicated. And I feel like there's some kind of a basic level of, like, well, here are the top 10 things that you should immediately change. You know, that kind of, something like that. So, okay. But that's only one of two paragraphs. The second one was incredible.
Wait a minute.
This one says.
Wait a minute. I'm reading it right now. Are you kidding me?
This is classic.
What, folks, if you're listening and you're a Windows dozer, what would you say is the worst default setting on Windows? What would you say?
Yeah. Sounds.
What?
That's what they said. The worst. So Kimber Streams, a Wirecutter editor, tests new laptops, says one of the first steps is to open the sounds menu. Again, there is no sounds menu. And select no sounds to mute many of the annoying chimes that play whenever something goes wrong with Windows.
Wow. Yeah,
so here's the thing.
Really?
I actually do. This is one of the first things I do in Windows as well. And I will tell you, when you go from Windows 10 to Windows 11, this is another example of something that takes a lot more steps. First of all, there's no such thing as a sounds menu. There are sound menu. There is a sound control panel.
Maybe that's
that has
what they
a
mean.
Sounds
yeah.
tab, but they don't tell you how to get to it. So if you're running Windows 10, you can right click the volume button in the system tray.
I just did that.
It's the
yes.
sounds. It's the sounds.
Sounds. Sound settings. Okay. Yes.
No, not sound settings.
Oh no, sound. Not. Oh, see, that's what Kimber does.
Hold on a second. No, you're running Windows 11. You can't do what I'm about to describe.
Oh, the hell with you, Paul Thurrott.
But you're next. I'm going to get to Windows 11. I'm going to show you how many different steps there are.
Okay.
So in Windows 10,
yes.
it's two steps. Right-click the volume, choose sounds, and not only does the right control panel open, but it goes to the right tab in that control panel.
Right?
Now, here's how Windows 11 adds extra steps.
Yeah.
You right-click on that thing, and you choose sound settings, which is what you did.
Yeah.
You scroll down to the bottom, and I already know where it is, so it's easy for me.
Yeah.
But there's something called more sound settings. Click that, and then the sound I know you have to find it.
So. There it is. There, okay.
All right, click that, and the sound control panel
is this
appears.
Is this a control panel from 1972?
This is from
1997. Holy cow.
But then you have to open the sounds tab.
Yes.
And then you have to choose the sound scheme. No sounds is what they're saying. And then you click OK. All right.
There's only two. This used to be in the old days. You could have all these different sound schemes. Remember?
Yep.
I used to have the Tokyo subway system sound scheme.
Yeah. You have you could get a plus pack and add sound schemes. This is just a vestigial kind of part of Windows.
So this says, do you no sounds? I kind of want to hear
no
some sounds.
Here's why.
Why?
Here's the thing. I got a couple of commentaries here about this. So the first one is, their advice is nonsense. The second one is, I do this all the time. The third one is Windows 10 and 11 both have a bug where you can change this to no sounds and it goes back to sounds. There's nothing you can do about it. There's no workaround. It just does not work. So you can change this. I assure you it will go back to Windows 10.
Start making sounds again.
It's broken. The reason I do this is because I'm a sloppy typist, and if I'm typing like
you get the donk.
Like I
get that all the time.
The bong, bong, bong. I hate that.
Yeah,
that's my little.
I feel
audio
like
clue.
I feel like I've stubbed my toe when I hear that sound.
So. I hate it. Yeah, it's awful.
Ugh.
So, but here's the tip. Here's the real tip.
Yeah,
this is a super fast way to do this.
Yeah,
just use Start Search and type sounds.
Yes, of course. That's how I would have done it.
Change system sounds is the first choice, and it goes to that exact tab, so it's faster.
Sounds.
That works. I think that works in 10 and 11.
Change system 11. Sounds. There it is. It's very simple.
And I guess start menu is a menu.
But that would be a good thing to teach people. And by the way, that is definitely not the first thing you change on Windows. Everyone knows the first thing you change on Windows is the default browser. Right?
Well, I have a whole chapter about the first things to change, so it's in the list.
The first
thing you should do is turn down the volume, because for some reason Windows PCs when they first put it 65% is super loud, super loud.
But for the New York Times, Brian X. Chen and Kimber Streams to say the worst default setting on Windows is the sounds.
Here's my problem with this. This is not specific. It doesn't tell you how to do it. It incorrectly names the elements that they're telling you have to go to.
Right.
I have correctly identified what all of these things are. It's a settings app. It's a sound control panel. It's a sounds tab. These things all have names, you know, and that's how you get someone to go to the right place in Windows. You tell them the right names.
I also think that this is a problem that inexperienced journalists have. This is probably the first thing they do in an office. For sure, right? You don't want to annoy people in the office.
Yeah.
This is not, I assure you, the first thing home users care about. Most of them want sounds.
Hey, Bob, what's the most annoying thing in Windows? Sounds? Okay. Like, seriously, that was the whole conversation? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's not the anti-privacy
stuff. All I can say is it's lucky there's a guy around who's doing a podcast with tips and tricks about Windows 11.
Sure.
This is though.
That one just. I'm drinking coffee. I'm reading the paper, and I'm like, "What freaking nonsense is this? Yeah. Like, this is the level of discourse we're going to have. I'm going to fix all of your devices in one whack. I'm going to give each of these things two sentences.
We know this from going to events in the before times. 99% of the journalists who go to events use Macs, right?
Yeah.
Oh, even the Windows
Brian
journalists.
Brian X. Chen uses a
even
Mac.
Windows,
I know he does.
Even the Windows journalists, right? Like, when we're sitting there with our Surfi and our little HP laptops, we're like, we should have our own little section because there's so few of us.
By the way, ironically, this whole article, no default settings on the Mac. They talk iOS, Android, and they talk Windows.
Leo? No, because the Mac is perfect.
Oh, yeah. We know that.
So
everyone knows.
Honestly, the discussion about settings you should change the moment you set up any device is a 5,000-word article. There's so much to say there.
This is even typical,
on Apple, which is very good about privacy and all that stuff. There is important settings to do right away that will prevent apps from tracking you. That's just job one. Like, you got to do this right away. Right. And superficial article. I was just blown away by how terrible it was.
Yeah, probably the editor came to him and said, Chen, I want 1,000 words on settings, and I want it by 5 a.m.
Okay, but if I was going to write this article and I was going to include the Mac, one thing I would do is turn on a Mac and actually look at it and say, well, this is how you get there,
Yeah. Try your text before you publish it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
Can I get new sound schemes? Can I get back my Tokyo Subway theme?
Yeah. I don't know that there's a sort, like, for example, in Windows 11, if you go to settings, personalized themes, you can download themes from the Microsoft Store that actually probably do include.
I think they do have some sounds. Yeah.
Sound schemes. Sound schemes are part of themes. Yeah. But as far as like just downloading sound schemes, you probably have to go to a third party site and use a VBA America. Yeah. So why would you do that? No, I'm sure they're available on the web, but I don't. Yeah. I'm not familiar with it.
I'm looking at an article where you can download them and then zip them and put them in a format
in a
that then you put them in a folder and then. Yep. So I think you can by hand create your own sound.
This is a leftover from Windows 95. This is literally
Remember
Windows 95 and 98 had those plus packs and you'd have birds chirping or little gizmos whining.
I think that's exactly. You have to create a RAR file of all things.
A RAR,
of course.
Yeah. Of course you do.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Also, I'm looking at my screenshot now, so I'm reminded there's also an option in there called Play Windows Startup Sound. That sound is actually a lot more pleasant in Windows 11 than it used to be. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you turn off sounds and reboot your computer and you hear that startup sound, you think, oh, I must have done something wrong. Actually, it's because it's a separate option. So.
Well, I want to thank Brian X. Chen because I don't actually want this Windows machine to make any noises because it's horrible on a podcast when you're listening and you hear an alert and you think it's your alert and you check your phone and say, well, no, that.
Yep.
And then you realize, oh, it's the idiot.
Oh, it's like
podcast.
Being in a room full of iPhone users and you hear a chime and every single one of them, ooh, you know, it could be any of us. Like, we all have the same stupid sound.
Marimba.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to make this my quest for next week. I'm going to get the Tokyo subway on my Windows sound 11 scheme. Machine sound scheme.
All right.
Your app pick of the week, sir. Actually, I think this is a Mac app originally.
I know. This is definitely an Apple-oriented developer. So what? I have been on a quest.
Wait, what's wrong? It works in Windows.
No, it's a Windows app.
It works in Windows.
No, don't relax. It's a Windows app.
Okay.
Actually, listen, Mary Jo, I got to tell you, Markdown is something you...
She
I could
should.
Picture you using.
She should be using
I know.
Markdown.
You told me I should try you. This. You have told me this. Yeah.
There's no point, unless ZDNet supports Markdown... In your CMS.
So this is the trick, right? The trick is you find a Markdown editor that generates clean enough code that you paste it into WordPress and it doesn't have any superfluous extra code.
That's what you do with Notepad, right?
That is what you do with Notepad. That's true. And by the way, because most people use Word, it's automatically configured to accept Word, you know, copy and paste from Word just comes in very cleanly. There's no, if you look at the code, it doesn't say, you know, font attributes and all this baloney. It's just the clean text with really clean attributes, you know, for headings and paragraphs and so forth. My issue is, so I use Markdown for the book. I write the book in Markdown.
Yeah, see, that makes sense because I'm sure that's a format supported by your publisher, right?
It's explicitly, the preferred format.
Yeah, my blog, I do Markdown. Mm-hmm.
The problem is, you know, two years ago, ish somewhere in the past few years, I switched because using two different tools doesn't always make sense. I was like, well, I'll switch to Markdown for writing articles for the web. And I use this legacy tool called Markdown Pad 2, which is available for Windows. I love it. I'm so used to the way it works, but this is like a real old tool. It's not supported. It's not updated anymore. It requires a very specific version of a Microsoft programming library, which is also out of date from 2010. But it creates the cleanest code and is perfect for the book. But of course, I've been trying to get rid of it. So there are kind of friendly apps for end users like Typora, which are great. But the back end code they create, if you paste into WordPress or whatever, is not as good. I also like the side by side view because you can write in like Typora is a rich text view where you're writing, you know, you're seeing the output. But I like to write in code, and you can do a side by side view where you see the code on one side and then the output on the other side.
That's I use Typora. It's funny that you should mention that. I like Typora, but I don't have this issue of exporting. It's very clean, but I do like the one you have chosen. That's a classic.
Yeah, so the reason I went to this, and I haven't purchased it yet. I actually tried this, excuse me, on the trip on trial, and then I just re-downloaded it on a different PC since I got home. I think I'm probably going to get it. It's called IA Writer. So IA... is, like you said, a kind of a Mac-oriented developer. This product might have appeared on the iPad first, for all I know. It's a Markdown editor. It does side-by-side editing if that's what you want. In fact, the default view is actually just code. It's not the rich text view. It's the code view. It has all the keyboard shortcuts you would expect. They're all correct. The code it creates is very clean. It's the reason someone might not want it is, A, you have to pay for it. It's $29. B, it's super minimalistic, which actually I like, but you can't use any font you want in the editor. They only have three fonts. They're what I would call typewriter style fonts. I happen to like them. It won't be for everybody for sure. That's on purpose. It's kind of the way the app is. It's an interesting choice. I just haven't found... I have to store all of the files I need for Markdown Pad in the cloud, so I never lose them, you know, because this stuff doesn't exist anymore. Like, this is not supported anymore. And I know at some point, you know, I have to replace it, so I keep trying. I can't use Typora for the book. I could use it for the website. What I want to do is find one tool I can use for everywhere.
I am going to make a weird suggestion.
Yep.
And it comes from, I'm sorry, Linux and Emacs.
That's right. Yep.
But
yep.
There's Typora supports something called Pandoc, which is a Swiss Army knife of export formats. So you can install Typora, install Pandoc, and then you can export into a huge number of formats.
This, when you say export, so this app does export to HTML and PDF, and I think to Word.
Yeah, but Pandoc, holy cow, does it
explode? Well, I should say, I'm not actually looking for export. What I'm looking for is you copy and paste.
So
I write an article in Word, or I write it in some Markdown editor.
Yeah.
I select all of the text and I paste it into WordPress.
Yeah.
And then I look at the code. And if the code has all those extra font attributes which I can't.
You want the Word Perfect Gremlin Zapper.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want, actually. I do want that.
Remember that?
I wish there was maybe there's a way to do this. When it comes down to it, I'm talking about a couple of level of headings, bold and italics, and hyperlinks. This is it. I'm sorry, bulleted list, maybe, or numbered
simple.
List.
But you want simple.
It's super simple format.
Yeah.
Most Markdown editors. So this is the difference between Notepad and plain text and Markdown, right? So you get basic formatting. It's basically rich text, but it's formatted in an XML type syntax. It's super simple. Notion does a sort of Markdown style thing. You know, when you do a heading, you type a code. You type /H2 to do a heading two. In Markdown, you would just type two hashtags and then the thing. And depending on the app you're using, it would either format it right there, or if you're doing a side-by-side view, you would see the code and then the formatted view over on the side. It's super simple. It's if you can handle Control-B for, you know, bold and Control-I for italics, the other things are just as easy. The headings and, you know, hyperlinks, you know, Control-K is typically the hyperlink for that. So it does all that stuff. I might be getting this. I just wanted to throw it out for anyone who is interested in Markdown. This seems like a...
IA writer. Like a, no, it's widely loved in the Mac world. It's been a long time choice for Markdown. Yeah.
It's probably web-based. That's probably how they got it on Windows. Kind of like Notion is, right? It's fine. I mean, it's fine. There's nothing wrong
with it. No, it's funny. Ironically, Notion just updated their iOS and Android apps to use native components instead of a web interface.
Oh, so hopefully that means you can zoom in on
it's
the
much faster.
Thing,
yeah,
one of the problems with
big improvement.
Know, Notion is you can't.
Yeah.
It doesn't do the pull.
By the way, Rick, let me recommend your article. You got to be a premium member, but of course you are of Therat.com.
Yeah,
your Alaska cruise article is really good, not just for cruising, although you have a lot of information about that. And I agree with you. The Honda America app is the most useless app ever created.
Jesus. Oh, my God.
Horrible.
Horrific.
Horrible. But
I'm going to have a second. I'm doing a second article.
Lots of good pictures in this, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well worth reading. And then you talk about some of the hardware that you took with you, and I presume you're going to do software as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to have a second article
that made it work. It's part of
I just wanted to get something out while I was there. You know,
yeah, really, really awesome. I'm sorry about
that. Was
room,
a great
though.
Experience.
I thought you had a nice room. This is terrible. What did we not?
Fine. It was fine.
I'm teasing.
It was fine.
Yeah, I love the view.
It was good. I liked having the balcony. My wife sits out. She sat out there a lot. I mean, I went.
Oh,
out
me
and took
too.
Pictures and
yeah,
you know, but she would. Sit
I lived
out there.
On our
she
balcony.
Looks,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Breathing into the Alaskan air every
oh my god, this is the cleanest.
Yeah, it smells so good. Oh,
Yeah, really
you could,
good.
As you get close, you're sailing and you're in the ocean, and as you get close to the island, you could smell pine. It smelled so good. It's like, that's what pine smells like? That's fantastic.
Like, this is what the earth was like before the humans destroyed
it.
You know?
Exactly. Wow. Pine smells great. Yeah. Mary Jo Foley, guess what? It's your turn. Enterprise pick of the week. Part one.
Yes. Part one is all about Microsoft getting more serious about trying to get business users and enterprises to go with Windows 11. So this week they announced two different tools that are aimed at IT admins to help them ease the transition from Windows 10 to Windows 11. One of these is called the Windows 11 and Office 365 Deployment Lab Kit. So this is something for admins to help them plan, test, validate modern desktops running Windows 11 Enterprise and Microsoft 365 Enterprise apps. And the way it works is it uses a Hyper-V dependent lab environment so that you can test out things like domain join clients, a domain controller, your internal gateway, and show you how a fully configured configuration management instance will work with your systems. There's also a thing called the Windows 11 Onboarding Kit. So this is a set of Office files that have templates and documents to help IT communicate with users. You know, IT, they're not the best at communicating with users. So this is going to help you do that better, I guess. The content can be customized as needed, it says. So if you are interested in these kinds of tools, or I guess a week ago, Microsoft announced something, what do they call this? Guided simulations for Windows 11. They've now got another tool that shows you how similar Windows 11 is to Windows 10. So for people who have heard and maybe personally experienced things that traumatize them about going from 10 to 11, this is meant to calm your fears and tell you it's really not that different. Let us show you how it's not that different. So I think it's really interesting. It's a little late for them to start doing some of this stuff. I feel like they could have done this a year ago, but maybe it's because they think 22H2, which is coming this fall, is really the version of Windows 11 that will be the right one for companies to start thinking about upgrading to, especially since we think Windows 12 is waiting in the wings for 2024. Huh. So, yeah, there's lots of tools like this. You can find them by going to the tech community blogs on Microsoft and look for some of these names of things I mentioned, and you'll get lots of details and other posts about all kinds of things you can do to try to make Windows 11 migration a better and easier experience.
You're going to get a big button that says "Don't panic" that you can wear.
Exactly.
Yes.
Nobody panic.
Do not panic.
You can do more with less. I've heard that somewhere on the show today.
Oh. Who is this less and where can I find him? Enterprise pick numero duo.
Yeah. So this is a little concerning. I didn't realize this until I saw Microsoft talk about this in a couple blog posts this week. But if you're still running Office 2016 and Office 2019, and many people are, I think I'm still running Office 2019 locally, in fact. Microsoft has decided that next October 2023, you will no longer be able to connect to Microsoft 365 backend services with these programs starting then. So I'm telling you over a year in advance because you may think, oh, that's a year away. Well, this is a pretty major problem, right? And what makes some IT people maybe lulled into a false sense of security is neither of these products is going to be out of support by next year.
Oh.
Both of them are in support until 2025. So you may think, I'll be fine. I can run these till 2025. Not if you intend to connect to things like Exchange and Online, SharePoint Online, OneDrive on the back end. You only have until next fall. Just word to the wise. Mark your calendars.
Also, I see you're running a Typora, which I like. So why?
Oh, you're looking at my icons down there, are you? Wow.
People are going to complain about that, not the Typora. I mean, about the the 2 years of not being supported there.
Yeah, they're not going to care. They've done this before.
Oh, that's crazy.
They've done this before.
That's a tough one.
Yep. Hmm. They're like, you know, guys, we know the products are supported, but if you want to run them, you can. You can just use them locally and not connect to anything on the back end. Enjoy.
Okay, wow.
Okay. I'm not saying this is good. I'm just saying they've done it before and people were mad and they didn't really care. They're going to do it again.
Yikes. I will. Yeah. This is another one where the radio show is who's going to take the brunt of this one.
Yep.
So I have to read this in detail. So I know what to say. Yep. Oh, God.
Just tell them to get on the Microsoft Enterprise channel and they'll be fine.
Don't you have the LTS version
LTS
C? Come on.
Come on, man.
Are you even
on E5? If you're on E5, everything's fine.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, help me, help me. All right. So those are important.
Yes.
Important crazy. Details. By the way, thank you to JT, who has apparently found and downloaded and posted in our Discord all the Tokyo subway sounds. I think these are nice... Nice sounds for
actually, they have that same pleasant vibe as the Windows 11 sound, sounds or whatever.
Yeah, you could use those. Instead of the stub your toe sound, just a little like that.
Burp. You're a jerk. Burp.
Bonk!
Bonk!
You're stupid.
Burp. 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 It's just so awful.
Thank you, JT. He found them, and maybe this is where I was thinking of. There was an OS... Mac OS instant messaging program called Adium, and they had a sound theme that was the Tokyo train stations. But this is the ones that came from that. But the one I was using, I'm sure, was on Windows, and I think it had a lot more sounds, including some longer announcements and so forth. So anyway, but thank you, JT. That starts my collection.
I want that Paris subway.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's better, isn't it? The SNCF sound. Dun, 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 dun. And then some... It is time for the bear of the week.
I always like the woman on the Paris stuff. She's like, Musée de Louvre.
Musée de Louvre.
It's like the perfect voice, It's like you're on the New York subway. It's like, get off.
Jump for the hole between the train and the platform.
Mind the gap. That's what they say in the UK. Mind the gap.
It's either that or Musée de Louvre.
Musée de Louvre. Mary Jo, do you have a beer for us?
I do. And it's a very surprising beer. It's surprising because it's so... I know I recommend a lot of high ABV beers. I think I've done some 17, 18s. Okay, I'm not perfect. I've done it. But this is a beer that is only 1.7%. But the good news is it tastes amazing. It tastes like a regular beer. The beer is from Hill Farmstead, one of the most famous craft breweries in the United States. They have a beer called Charlie. I think Charlie is deceased now, but it was their brewery Golden Retriever, so they named a beer for him. And this beer, I had it, the bartender poured it for me and didn't tell me the ABV and just said, what do you think of this? And I was like, wow, that's a really great farmhouse ale. It's really lemony, it's super bright, and a little bit of hops, not too much hops. And he said, yeah, it's 1.7%.
Ooh.
And I was like, wow, that's it?
I love
it. It actually tastes like a beer.
That's more than sessionable. That's...
Oh, yeah.
Drink it all day.
You can drink this all day and you'd be okay. But what's great is a lot of breweries now are making these lighter beers. And when you drink them, you're like, it's just not very tasty or it tastes kind of watered down or weak. This one, if you didn't know it was 1.7, it tastes like a full-fledged, 6, 7, 8% beer. It's got all the flavor, all the hops. Delicious. So if you can find it... it's bottled, I think, maybe even in cans on draft. Hill Farmstead Charlie is your beer.
That beer has a jingle. There's a fragrance that's here today, and they call it Charlie. Super fragrance that thinks thank you, Mary Jo Foley. You remember that? You probably don't. You have to be pretty old.
I do.
There's a beer that's here to stay, and they call it Charlie. Mary Jo Foley.
Here's a girl that hears. It's here to say. Was it? What was it?
It's a fragrance. It's Charlie perfume. And perfume. It was Bobby Short singing.
This is like right out of the '70s.
Kind of young, kind of now, Charlie. Kind of free, kind of wow, Charlie. Kind of fragrance that's gonna stay. And Right. That's going to guarantee that we get taken down by the Charlie Perfume conglomerate.
Assuming they're still in business.
Yeah, maybe we're in luck. And content ID. You know, it's so funny because the ad is on YouTube. I'm playing it from YouTube. Should I play it in a podcast, YouTube will take it down.
Right.
I don't get it. I don't understand.
Process is not good. It's not good.
If you heard us talking about it, but you heard nothing, it's because the editors are protecting me from myself. I'm the one that says, leave it in. Leave it in. I don't care. Leave it in. Yeah. And then we get taken down and everybody's mad at me. Thank you very much, Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. Thank you for doing such a great job last week.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It gives us permission to have another lost weekend sometime soon. Actually, I have jury duty next week.
So it's going around this year, isn't
I may
it?
Not I tell everybody.
Just tell them you're, under the weather.
Well, I will test, and if I test positive on Sunday, I'll say, I can't do it. But I put it off. Just it was supposed to be during the cruise, so I've already put it off once. Mm. I believe in doing it because if the only people who serve on juries are the people who can't think of a way to get out of it, that's not good.
No, it's not good.
That's not good. So it's my civic duty. I'm looking forward to it. I'll get that $5 a day, and I'm excited about that.
Yep.
It's unknown, right? I call Sunday, and if they need me, I'll be there. It's unknown. I think by Wednesday I should be here, but if I'm not, that's why.
Even if you have to go in.
If not. I've only served on one jury. It was great fun. I highly recommend it.
I've never had to do it.
You probably put on a wig.
No, I got called recently for the first time in my life, and they canceled it.
Yeah.
I know.
I've been called
many times, but I've never served.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I was on a federal jury. That was fascinating.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com. Become a premium member so you get all the good, juicy stuff. It's worth it. It's worth it. I'm telling you. But there's a lot of free content, too. Thurrott, Thurro, doublegood.com. Paul's Field Guide to Windows 10 is available at leanpub.com. Soon, the Field Guide to Windows 11. The manuscript will be slightly stained by seawater and the tears of melting glaciers, but it will be very fresh. Smell the piney scent of the Field Guide to Windows 11. Leanpub.com. We do Windows Weekly on Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch us do it live, live.twit.tv. There's audio and video feeds, so I guess you could watch or listen live. If you're watching and listening and or listening live, chat live in our IRC chat, irc.twit.tv. You can use a browser to go there, but you can also, if you're an old school IRC user, use your IRC client. It's actually great. All the information that you need to log in is available at irc.twit.tv. Club members can use our Discord. Always fun in there. Lots of animated GIFs and fun and games. And we've got some great stuff coming up in the club, in our Discord. Coming soon, we're going to do a members ask me anything or a members meet and greet. Ed's put that together. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Let me pull that up here. I have to push some buttons. Get it going. Here we go. There it is. There's the subway things. Let's see. What is coming up? Three events. Members Fireside Chat. That's tomorrow, 9 a.m. Early morning fire. August 18th, the rescheduled Alex Lindsay AMA. I know a lot of people want that. And Stacy's Book Club this month. Coming up August 25th, Clara and the Sun. Really good novel. I'll be there, and it'll be a lot of fun. The club has not just discussions about all of our shows, but all kinds of geeky conversations, including travel. We have a cruise channel. We have ham radio, coding, comics, beer, wine, and cocktails, data science. It's a great community. Highly recommended. You also get, for your $7 a month, not only access to the Discord, you also get ad-free versions of all the shows, including the brand new Hands on Windows, Paul Thurrott hosts. That's just launching now. And that's thanks to club members who made that possible. Thank you, club members. You also get the Twit Plus feed, which has material that we don't put out as podcasts. There's lots of good stuff in there. You can subscribe to individual shows like Hands on Windows for $2.99 a month. All of that at twit.tv/clubtwit. I think that Hands on Windows, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, is club only at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And we do that not because we want to leave anybody out, but because when shows are brand new, like This Week in Space was, no advertising, no audience. They go hand in hand. So the club members basically are financing it, so we give them access. But if all goes well, and I'm sure it will, that will eventually become an advertising-supported show available to all. But for now, I think $7 a month is not a lot to pay for all of that goodness. Episode 1 of Hands on Windows comes out this week, yes?
This should be tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yeah. So it's going to be every Thursday. And you're doing, like, you know, the stuff, you know, you do... on your tips.
I mean, the first few will be, you know, the basics, top 10 new features, top 10 terrible new changes, you know, that kind of stuff. And then we'll settle into.
Yeah. No, Twit is not turning into a paywall, Pelly. We give you so much free content, including this show, available at twit.tv/WW. Download it for free, ad supported, but free. You also can see it on YouTube. That's free. And if you want, you can even subscribe in your favorite podcast player and get it every Wednesday, the minute it's available for Windows Weekly. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time right here on Windows Weekly.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.